You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSC has closed its doors for another day, so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow. And as it's a Thursday, I'm speaking to David Shapiro from Sasrim Securities, sometimes in Johannesburg, sometimes in New York, but today in Boston. How were the Jewish holidays, David?
They've been good. No, it's always, you know, it's a family time. And as much as you moan and groan, it's always good to sit around with your family and talk and catch up with the news. And there's always good food. That's one thing. If you go to a Jewish function, you're never going to be short of good food. So, that's been the nicest thing, is just to catch up with family.
Just before we get on to the markets, I was watching an episode of Seinfeld the other night, and Cosmo Kramer, you know, my favorite character, was hosting a Jewish singles evening, and he had to do the cooking, and he came up with all these different all these different names of Jewish dishes. So what do you have? Please tell me, because I love food.
traditionally, you'll always, it depends. I think today the modern generation have almost shunned what was traditional type of cooking. But if you go back to my mother's day, if we would always start with like a chicken soup. You know, today it's a fancier soup, but you always, chicken soup was always first, and then you'd have a fish dish, which would be, and you can't have, you know, you're not allowed to have prawns or any.
No.
They have to be naturally. So just traditional, old, because the Jews were very poor, especially those who came from Russia and Eastern Europe and that. So they couldn't afford fancy fish. So they learned to make good dishes. You know, you'd always have gefilte fish, which is almost a chopped fish with chrein, which is washed radish. And, you must have meat as a main course. It's always, there must be a meat course, you know, because that's what distinguishes the festivals from other evenings, and that, you know, meat was a delicacy. And that's why every Shabbos, you know, you'd always have a meat dish, or every Jewish holiday, you'd have a meat dish. And then, obviously, the sweets, you know, but you can't mix milk and, so you can't have proper ice cream. It's got to be sorbets, but fruits and puddings and everything. So there have been a lot of Jewish dishes, but when we were at my mom's place, you know, in the old days, we don't do that anymore. You'd have herring, always herring. And, typical Eastern Europe, or what do you call it? The Baltics.
Yes.
You know, those kind of, that kind of, you know, that kind of.
There's your phone.
That's my wife. It's my wife, Linda, phoning from downstairs. But you'd always have some kind of herring, pickled herring or proper herring. And the other one was what they called, it was aspic. I can't remember what it's called today. I've just lost the name of it. But those were the dishes that we used to have.
But you do still have traditional dishes, although it's been jazzed up a little bit, because it's very interesting. And I'll get off the food theme in a moment, because I was watching an episode of a Stanley Tucci series
Italy.
CNN, yes, Searching for Italy, I think it's called. And he went to Rome, and he went to the Jewish quarter and interviewed this woman who'd lived there all her life. And she gave the history of Rome and how the Jewish people were sort of isolated and sidelined from normal economic life. And so they were very poor, and they had almost like their own quarter, not a ghetto, but a quarter. And how they adapted the food, and now this food is incredibly fashionable and extremely delicious. So it's quite interesting. Food is a very interesting part of a nation's or of a culture, David.
Oh yeah, and it's been adapted to where, you know, where the people made their home, exactly like that.
Yes,
you know, like Italy, where they would stay in ghettos. They never had the money, and they would always adapt what they could, from, and I think a lot of nations, I mean, even the Italians and Portuguese, if you look at a lot of the Mediterranean nations as well, also, you know, never had the kind of money of their northern neighbors. And the food is around very basic ingredients.
Yes. But they make
that's why meat was a delicacy.
In many different cultures as well, in many different countries, meat is something that was inaffordable and is considered to be a treat. I mean, go to the south of France, for example. Go to a village in the south of France, and you speak to old people. They have meat once a week if they're lucky, because it's part of their tradition. You didn't eat meat because it was too expensive, so you had chickpeas and salads and all that sort of thing. Yeah, chickens.
And the one thing that I forgot to mention was gehackte herring, which was herring, where you'd minced herring or liver. You know, my mum's, I used to love her liver, which was, what do you make it from? Chopped liver.
Yeah.
But you would, you would add flavor to it, et cetera. And always, that's always been a delicate, so-called traditional dishes,
Anyway, before we end it, herring's a very big part of life in the Netherlands as well, because every July, August, there's the new herring comes in and it's raw, and they have these stalls that are set up, and you get the herring and you order two herrings. It's got a tail on it, completely raw. They put onion on it, and you take the tail and you eat the thing whole. You sort of slide it off the bone. Yeah. It's actually rather delicious. It's an acquired taste, but I love it.
If you go to, there was one of the things that I used to love, and we're coming into Sukkot, and I won't explain that. That comes off the Yom Tov, where you eat in these in a sukkah, which is basically made up of temporary abode made up with leaves on the top, which really is a signifies the years in the desert that the Jews spent in temporary. But it's a very celebratory festival. And the one thing that I used to love at shul, I used to have the raw herring, but you'd have it with cold vodka.
Oh, that's even better. There we go.
Yeah, yeah.
You'd
always toast. And I'd do it before you went into shul. You'd have to have a l'chaim. So you'd have some raw herring with this vodka,
Okay, you're making me hungry now.
And then go pray. And then go and pray.
Pray for it to end so you can have another vodka. Okay. David, my theme of this week in your absence has been just looking at what's been happening, and I've looked at a couple of the sell-offs that I've known in my time, either as a broadcaster on business radio or television or podcasting, or as a broker in London or in Johannesburg, and I've never known such a set of circumstances coming together all at once. Look at 1987. No one really knows why the market crashed in 1987. Yeah. No one has ever adequately explained that to me. We know why the pound had a crisis when George Soros attacked it. We know why there was a crisis. What was it? 97, 98? An Asian crisis. Exactly. All these events when the markets have crashed.
The Asian tigers,
That's
then
it.
The Thailand and then shock.
That's right. The Thai bark
at the same time we had the
when it got stuffed, this is very, very different, because everything's come together at the same time. It's a global health crisis. It's geopolitics. It's rising interest rates. It's rampant inflation. It's supply chain. And there's several other things. And I thought, I've never seen this before. And that, to me, is why the personality of this bear market is completely different, because it keeps on going. Last night in the States, the S&P was up nearly 2%. I'm looking at my screen now. Let's have a look at this thing. It's down 2.2%, the S&P 500 futures. It's constant. Every time there's a rally, market participants come in and they whack it. And I find it a little bit disturbing. I don't know about you.
Yeah, very, very much so. And I think that's what concerns me more than anything else, is that, by nature, and the one thing that I've learnt I've visited America very often, but when you're around here and you look and you talk to people, America's an innovative economy. It wants to go forward. It wants to grow. It wants to find new ways, and that's what's always built it. And if anything, at the moment, it needs growth to keep it alive, and that's why you've got Biden's bills, which are designed at building more factories and so on. More IT factories, renewing the infrastructure. And what's happening is that the Fed wants to go the other way. It wants to almost, I call it carpet bomb it. And what happened today is that there was still indications of of personal consumption picking up.
Yeah.
And there was the job numbers, you know, I mean, there's still plenty of jobs available. The new claims were down at a very low levels. So what happens? People get worried because what does the Fed do? Says, okay, that just gives us more ammunition to keep raising rates.
And you've got to
say, hold on a sec. Something's wrong. And you're identifying it now in the way that the market's performing. The market's telling you, we don't trust the people in charge. You know, that's what the market's telling you by going down like this. You know, for me, it's an indication, and we saw it in the UK, that when markets respond this way, it's really a reflection of lack of confidence.
Yeah.
So it's credibility gone.
Exactly, yeah. Credibility gone. The situation in the United Kingdom since last Friday, which is almost a week ago, when the new Chancellor of the Exchequer, who's a very well educated, when he was the Business Secretary, he was excellent and he speaks well. And then he became Chancellor of the Exchequer, and then he seems to lose it. He seemed to be overconfident, and he did this extraordinary so-called mini budget. And started spending. And the market said, wait a second, the pound fell by 7%. The gilt market collapsed, and gilt rates went to 5%. And then the Bank of England comes in and starts buying up, in other words, quantitative easing again, buying up the issuance of its own gilts. And it went to below, from 5% to below 4%. And I thought, what on earth is going on? And I saw one commentator who sat there, almost, she was shaking her head on business television in the UK, and just said, we are an embarrassment. And I honestly think that Liz Truss and the Chancellor will, Kwasi Kwarteng, will actually initiate a vote of no confidence in the new government, because it has been so bad, David. It's really awful.
Yeah. And that, I think that triggered concerns globally.
Yeah.
And my big worry, and I'm saying I share your sentiment, because this is kind of shades of March 2020. You know, when we in March 2020, when COVID hit the world and everybody started to lock down their economies, no one knew what was going to come next, and we had this massive sell-off and lack of confidence. And it's only afterwards, when government intervened, did you start to see the markets picking up. And I think we're in one of those situations at the moment. Nobody knows what's coming next, you know, and you've got the Fed. They've said what they've had to say, and they're saying it now with great force. And I don't think they're thinking about what they say. You know, I don't know what their game plan is. Yes, we've got your message, you know, and they keep reinforcing it without thought. Obviously, it's a coordinated effort. They've all sat around the table and they're not giving up. But I'm saying somewhere along the line, you've got to concede. You're saying this is not healthy. And I was just talking to someone yesterday, and I was saying, you know, we look at it from a trading point of view. We talk about share prices going up and share prices going down, and traders coming and knocking the market. But it's a whole lot different if you're a worker on the railways, or alternatively been working for a bank or whatever it is, and you're due to retire, and you see your savings get pummeled. Because it hasn't only been the equity market, it's been the bond market and property market as well that has been taken away, absolutely annihilated. And suddenly you're in a position where your pension, you know, or the amount of money that you put for saving has suddenly been taken away, you know, 30% down. That's a big number.
Yeah.
You know, 30%, these are big numbers. And I'm trying to find, you know, the midpoint. I'm saying, hold on, Fed. I know you're there to look after inflation, but there are other elements that you also have to consider as well. You know, you can't just be hammering these seals with a blunt instrument, you know, or what I call carpet bombing the economy.
Yes.
You know, you can't keep carpet bombing the economy and then say, okay, you know, once everything's destroyed, we'll pick up again. No. And that's a big concern for me. And I'm not talking from a personal point of view. I'm talking from managing other people's money, and people are very confused and can't understand what's happening in the global economy. You know, they'll take their frustrations out on us, and I'm talking us, the industry. But overall, there's got to be consideration. You know, this is, they never, you know, it comes back to it. Nobody ordered this. You know, the world economy closed down for 2 years because of COVID. No one ordered it. You know, it was brought about by governments and so on. Admittedly, they came in with plans. But I mean, you've got to consider that it did upend the market. You know, it caused huge issues with supply chains and so on. Then we get Ukraine, and now the government's, oh no, you know, the biggest enemy now is inflation. We've got to wipe it out. And people are just absolutely shaken, you know, having come through
people
what
we've confused,
come through.
People are confused, David. And I want to make another point here. You're not a short-term trader. You don't go in and out of the markets like some of the younger chaps that you and I speak to occasionally on this platform. But I've never seen, for example, the S&P in the last week or so. In fact, this week, it has four different phases. It's flat in the morning, and I think, okay, well, that's great. And then I look at it at lunchtime, and it's down 0.75%. Mm. And by the time the US opens, it's up 0.7%. And then it keeps on rallying. It goes down again, goes up again. There are four or five different phases to the S&P 500 futures. That is not normal. That tells me that people don't know what they're doing. And it's either a good sign, because it means there's a lot of churning at the bottom of a market, which is a typical feature of a market changing trend, i.e., volatility and churning, as I said. But on the other hand, it tells me that people don't know what to do, and they're confused, and they're not being led by prime ministers, presidents, and central bankers.
That's absolutely right. Absolutely right. Is for Powell to come and say we need to go through pain? You know, who are you? What kind of pain? In other words, we need 3 million people. We need 3 million people to give up their jobs, which is what he's saying. We need unemployment up at 4.2 or something like this. We need to get unemployment. Now, hold on a second.
Okay, wait a moment. You know, that's the bedrock of the American society, is owning a house and having a job.
That's exactly what I'm saying to you. You know, we don't want you to own. You know, we don't want you to buy houses. Because it's inflationary or whatever it is, you know, we need to bring inflation down. So it just goes, that's what I'm saying, it goes against everything that America stands for. Mm. And can you imagine that the whole of last year, 2021, the message was we need to give back those people who lost their jobs through COVID. Now you're going to say, sorry, boys, back on the roads, you know, back in the park, sleeping on the benches. So, it just doesn't make sense. And that's what you're saying. The messaging is so bad. The messaging is so, and that's what's causing the confusion in these markets. And to be honest, Lindsay, and I concur with you, it's a very worrying sign. You know, having looked at other markets and having lived in markets, I'm saying this is not performing. There might be bond vigilantes there or equity vigilantes out there who are saying, okay, you know, people are panicking, let's drive it in. You know, let's keep going short, keep going short, keep going short. In other words, you keep driving it down for your own benefit. You're short the market or whatever you do, and then come in and pick up the pieces.
Whenever there's some serious intervention in a market, like there was from the Bank of England yesterday, buying up its own gilts, that is a huge warning sign. And as I said to a commentator yesterday, I said, when that happens, you know there's something wrong. And what hedge funds do when they see that happening, they stand aside and they say, okay, off you go. How much more have you got? And then they take them on, and the thing goes in the opposite direction, and then you've got chaos. I've seen it so many times. I saw it. I saw it when Paul Volcker.
We shouldn't be in that situation.
Volcker did that in the 80s with the US dollar. Everyone said, "Oh, good, the Fed's are actually intervening in the currency market now." And then they said, "Thank you very much. Off we go. Once you've finished." I find it terribly worrying and a little bit disconcerting. I would find it more disconcerting if I was like you, managing people's money.
Yeah. There's no direction from government. Direction from the Fed is not exactly what American economy stands for. And that's what I find, you know, very good. And they're ramming it down people's throats. You know, the messaging is coming almost in an authoritarian type way. You know, we're going to get on top of it. We've got to get it down to 2%, you know, and it's not going to come. There's going to be pain. And you say, hold on a sec, you know, what do we do to deserve this? We did nothing wrong. We've just got over COVID now, yeah. You know, what do you, so I think that, you know, and listen, I'm not an economist. I'm not a commentator. You know, we've got, people sitting there, these large organizations, and they dispense very, how could you call it? It's almost like writing daily notes and everything, but it doesn't mean anything. You know, it doesn't address the concerns of people out there. So I must say that after seeing what happened yesterday and then see it completely reverse and go the other way, for no reason, simply because some of the economic data is actually good. You know, it just shows you that there is an economy out there and things are doing well. The market goes into panic because they just fear, oh God, you know, what is the Fed going to do now? So I to conclude, I mean, just to, and yes. I just think the market's saying people in charge got no credibility because we don't know what they're going to do next.
Just looking at the 52-week range on the S&P, 4,808 is the high over the last 52 weeks. The low has been 3,613. And at the moment, as we speak, 3,655 is what we're looking at. So we're very, very close to a 52-week low. And we're at the lowest level, I think, for the last couple of years. Anyway, let's talk about South Africa now, the stock exchange, the JSE Securities Exchange. This is another thing that worries me a little bit about South Africa because suddenly Capitec is down 10 1/3%. That has been a bank that has serviced people beautifully. It's a, it's an innovative bank. It services traditionally lower income workers, lower income people, and it's done incredibly well. Suddenly, it's not doing well.
I don't know why. You know, for me, the result is a very acceptable result, 17% for whatever reason. Maybe the dividend was a bit under what the market expected, whether that's exposing weaknesses in their cash, you know, position, I'm not quite sure. They're an expansionary bank. I think they've got to a point where they know that they need to expand into other areas. In other words, the initial areas in which they operated, I think they might have not exhausted it, but they need to look for other areas, and they're going into traditional banking. I rate them very highly. I rate where they've come from and where they're going as an exceptional, you know, an exceptional, call it passage. They've done, and so I'm not sure why the market has punished them as much as this, but it does give you an idea of how much speculation there is in the market as well. You know, that you can move shares like 10% on these kind of results. They did give a profit warning, not a profit warning, sorry, a profit update. So we knew that the results were going to be within this range. So I'm not quite sure whether this is, you know, why it's taken the kind of knock that they have. Yesterday they were up, funny enough. They were the one of the few banks that were up. So maybe we should read it on a two-day view, but it was up slightly in a day where things were under quite a bit of pressure.
A couple
looking
of other,
today,
a couple of other things that came out. We had a high prop property companies. I don't know. My son, he's becoming a student of the markets, and he said, "Dad, why when interest rates go up, do property companies suffer? What are the fundamentals?" I thought I'm going to give him David Shapiro's number, but I didn't because of the Jewish holidays. But anyway, you got high prop out, and then there's Netcare as well. They came out with an update. Did you see either of those? I know one of them was very late.
I didn't see Netcare. But I see Netcare is up because we were, I was just commenting that some of the hospital companies were punished for no reason at all because I think they've come out of, you know, they're all pointing in the right kind of direction. I see Netcare is up today. I'm a little behind simply because of time differences with catching up with the, you know, some of the results that have come through. But I mean, it's a decent operation. Yeah, it's a decent operation, and it's in a country that needs private healthcare, and I don't think that's going to be a challenge for some time. And you know, MediClinic's being taken off and being bought out by the Remgro Group together with the shipping company, and you know, that says a lot because it does. They're not buying it because they think that it's they're not going to make money out of it. So I think Netcare and Life Healthcare are going to be the only two companies that exist, you know, in the hospital group. But they're up. Listen, it's a good operation. I must say that that I had a recent experience there, and I was very pleasantly surprised. You know, not pleasantly. I was, you know, it was a high quality service, good care. I can't say anything bad about the particular hospital that I was in.
Better than the United States of America, where you are now.
Well, and now much more comfortable. Yeah. The only thing is, I couldn't watch football on TV. That's all. Their systems are a little outdated. That was my only complaint.
I'd rather be in pain than not watch football. But anyway, that's for another discussion. David, let me have a look at the spot prices with you. Because the rand is $17.99. Yeah. It's behaving itself. It's barely changed from 24 hours ago. British pound against the rand is 19.85, and the euro rand is 17.59 with the euro dollar. Actually, the dollar's fallen, interestingly, by nearly 2% in the last 24 hours. It's 97.72. In other words, 1 euro buys you 0.9772 US dollars. So it's still below a dollar, but anyway, there's been a bit of a reversal there. British pound has rallied substantially. On Monday it was 103.30, it's now 110.30. Yeah. So people are just suddenly saying, wait a second, Britain is still Britain, let's get on with it. Gold price, 16.57 because of the dollar move, weakness in the US dollar, 16.57, which is up $34 an ounce, or 2.1%. The platinum price is up 13. 863, and palladium $195 higher. $195 higher. Nearly 10%, David, for palladium. This thing is all over the place. And it's obviously a thinly traded commodity. Anyway, it's 2,230. And also on the upside, we've got, it's not now. It's suddenly turned tail. As I said, that Brent crude oil is now down 0.4%, $88.97, and West Texas crude is $81.80, which is also down 0.4%. Natural gas prices have fallen over 3%, and other things, and not much going on there. The commodities situation is quite an interesting one. You've obviously got to be, instead of a shotgun approach, you've got to be a sniper when it comes to commodities, I think. I don't know what to go for.
You know something, that I've been sitting here and doing quite a bit of reading into individual companies, and for the first time, you know, you're starting to look at seriously good value. I know that the markets are down and they're volatile, but if you start to pick up individual shares, even if you look at South African, and I was talking on Wayne, we were on TV last night, and he was mentioning Old Mutual. You know, I've never been a great believer in, certainly in this environment, I think it's very difficult for financial companies to sell their products, you know, when people are feeling insecure and haven't got money. But still, you get to levels of pricing where you've got to say, hold on a sec, this is cheap. And I think we're reaching those levels in individual stocks. I know we're going through a lot of volatility. I know that we've got a lot of, you know, we're still very, very concerned about the people in charge. But I think over the next few months, you're going to find the inflation start, you know, inflation started to fall and a little bit of confidence picking up. But I think we're reaching that blood in the streets moment where, you know, sometimes the pricing, individual shares are a little, you know, are down the levels, which are, very tempting.
Well, that's interesting. Because you mentioned Wayne, and I spoke to McCurry yesterday, as I always do on a Wednesday, and I said to him, "Well done for holding off. Well done for not plunging into the markets," because he was feeling a little bit trigger happy at one stage a couple of weeks ago when there was a bear market rally, and he just said, "Now things are starting to look good." And although he's bearish on commodities, he's starting to see value in commodity stocks. For example, he said Anglo's has gone down from rounding up and rounding down 800 to 500. Impala Platinum has nearly halved. And he gave me lots of examples. So I think people might be sitting down and saying, okay, yeah, there's not much bullish news out there, but we don't want bullish news. We want to buy when there's bearish news, and then the bullish news comes and we reap the benefits. So,
You know what we must watch? You know what we must watch?
Yes.
Just watch the U.S. bond market. I think that's going to be the clue. If they start, and I saw Jeff Grundlich, I think, you know, who's an ultra bear, who's been a bond trader, and, you know, and he's not really bearish. That's unfair on him. But all of a sudden he's come out and saying, hold on a sec, you know, these long bones are starting to look attractive at these kind of levels. I think he might have said that when the 10-year bond went over 4 the other day, but it's still a 370, 375. And when you start to get the bond buyers coming in for, you know, at these levels, I'm talking the long bonds in the US, and those rates start to come down, that will be support for the equity market. You know, you will see a rally in equity market. So watch the bond markets for clues. You know, that's where I think you – also, we come into the results season. It's going to be interesting to understand how companies have handled the inflationary environment and the tighter – you know, tighter monetary conditions and so-called fall off in demand and so on. So I think it's also going to be a clue as to what things happen. But I think look for value. You know, if something looks cheap to you, then go for it. Mm. You know, I think, you know, go for it. I think things, you know, things will change as we get into the latter half of the year. I think politically the Fed has to have some kind of you know, it might not be political, but I think that you know, politics will also start to sway where they are. There'll be just too much pressure on them to allow the U.S. economy to go into a complete and total slump, you know, ahead of
midterms
elections. There, it's very important, and they've got to recognize that as well, you know, because I mean they play into the hands of the opposition. Say, hold on a sec. You know, just give us some support. Yeah. That'd be absolute pricks.
I believe so. Anyway, the US 10-year bond yield, which you just referenced, 3.76%, did go to 4% this week, the first time for an awfully long time. The South African 10-year, now this is an interesting one, 10.99%.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an 18. That's a big move. That's a really, really big move. It's 11%. I mean, what would you do? I mean, the Rand's obviously very volatile and under pressure and above 18 to the US dollar, or rather at 18 at the moment. Do you say to yourself, 11% versus 3.75% versus 3.9% in the United Kingdom? What do you do? I don't know. Would you, if you were a bond trader, would you be a nibbler?
I think so. I think at these levels, definitely, yeah. I think they've held up remarkably well.
Mm.
If you look at, you know, I mean, if you compare the movements, you know, they've held their ground. And I think, you know, conditions should improve in the last quarter. I'm not saying they're going to be runaway. I'm just saying they're not going to be as bad as we are experiencing at the moment. And that's all you need. So watch those bonds. I think watch those bond rates. I think that will give you, you know, if you start to see them leveling out and just starting to fall a bit, you know, forecasting a recession and forecasting the end, inflation is going to come down, then the equity market will pick up, you know, from that. But I would go individual stocks. I wouldn't go for the index. I think you've got to be very particular. You know, I was looking at ASML, which is in your part of the woods and that. I mean, for a company with its future, just starting to look, hold on, I think this is looking attractive again, you know, particularly where they see turnover increasing, you know, where they can't keep up with capacity and they're seeing turnover increase at least 10% per annum. You know, this is for big machines. That's a big number.
Yeah.
Okay, I can live with this. Mm-hmm.
Let's have a look at some of the individual movers on the JSE today. On the upside, Anglo American Platinum up nearly 7%. Northern Platinum up 6.5%. This is to do with, I think, the palladium price. So Sibanye-Stillwater, again, a palladium, or rather white metal producer, nearly 5% to the good. Anglo-American PLC up 4.1, and Kumba Iron Ore up 4%. Just like the old days on the JSE, David, it would be the commodities board, and it would all be flashing green, or people would be chalking up green, or whatever it was when you were on the floor. But yeah, a really sort of old school day where everything is split down the middle, because on the downside we've got Capitec down 10.25%, Renet down 5.6%, Bidvest down 4.5%, Barlow World, after its trading update, voluntary trading update yesterday, had a good day yesterday, but now down nearly 4.5%, and Massey Copperty Company down 4.2%. It's all over the place, this this market. I know you're in Boston, but anything that's stuck out for you outside of those ones that I've just mentioned?
We mentioned Capitec. You know, we mentioned that. But the their retailers under a bit of pressure. Fashini, Mr. Price. The other one that's disturbing me is Aspen as well, because it started to pick up after its results and after its dividend. But I see it's also starting to fall back. It's come all the way back to 130. And I thought it was going to break through a range, you know, and it's back into that range again. You know, other companies like MTN coming under a bit of pressure as well. So, and financials. You know, I watched recently, I saw, remember Investec went up to 100 Rand, and it's back to 70 Rand. Now, that's a 30% fall, yes, and we're talking about recently.
Yeah.
Yes, admittedly, they're exposed to the UK. But, you know, we forget about it. We, you know, we forget about where they were and how far they've come back. So, I mean, the South African market has been under a lot of pressure.
And on that note, give us the closing indices, if you would, because I think the JSE's overall indices have behaved quite well, given the fact that the S&P, when the JSE closed, was down 2% and still is down 2%. Mm-hmm. We'll come to the US in a moment. So, but the JSE seems to say, no, enough selling now. And we don't believe the US. Well, we believe it's going to bounce back. So, okay, we're down, but not down as much as I would have expected, David.
No. And that's mainly because of the resource stocks that you mentioned.
Yes.
You know, it was a pickup in the resource prices. Whether this has anything to do with Russia and their latest moves, I don't know. You know, that's just a sham. But the all-share index down 0.85% at 63264. Top 40 down a similar amount, 0.86%, 56921. That's where the index is. Then the resource index up over 3%.
Gosh.
Whichever way you look at it, you know, the top 10, the resource 10 up 3.3, and the SA resources, up 3.1%. So, and that's all driven by those platinum stocks in there. And then we come to, unfortunately, the banks and, consumer stocks. They down quite dramatically. You know, banks down 3.25%. That's a big move down. And that's not only brought about by Capitec, but the whole host of other banks as well. And you know, your consumer discretionary, it's an index I watch, which is mainly made up of the retailers and consumer stocks. It also includes Richemont and so on. That's down about 2.9%. Overall, the industrial down 2.25%. So not a good day there. The values, I must say, have picked up recently. Now, I don't know whether that's got to do with balancing, whatever the reason is, balancing various indices and so on. But and the other thing, I don't know whether you picked it up, the Naspers and Prosus have suspended their buybacks while they, you know, while they pay out their dividends. So I think there's been a suspension of that, and I think the shares have come back quite a lot. But Naspers, the trade today, I would call it 26.25 billion, which is above where we've been.
Very much so. There must be something going on there, because that's unusual. Mm. Yeah, okay.
So it's a fairly decent trade, yeah.
Lovely. S&P is currently down exactly 2%. The futures, that is, 3,657. I wouldn't mind betting that that's only down 0.5% or 1% by the close, and the JSE has probably got it right ahead of the close of the US markets. Yeah. That's my feeling. It doesn't have this punchy feel about it or this panicky feel about it, the S&P. David, when are you back in South Africa?
Yesterday. I'm back in the 11th.
11th.
I fly out on the 10th, the evening of the 10th, and I'm back on the 11th. So I'm here for Yom Kippur.
Ah, you've got two more weeks. Fantastic.
Well, nearly, just under 2 weeks.
Very good.
A lot of traveling on the trains and the planes. But it's been nice. I must say, it's Boston is a very therapeutic city. I'm going for a walk in the forests. So, No, it's not cold, it's not warm, it's just 53 degrees Fahrenheit, so, which is fine, but it's sunny.
Good, and watch out for Hurricane Ian, which when it
and
leaves...
And you haven't mentioned that this when it, Saturday morning
it,
yeah, is...
When it meets this Saturday morning, Arsenal Tottenham, the North London Derby.
Arsenal Spurs, yeah, I know, 7:30 our time. But I must say, my sister-in-law... that's Linda's sister, lives down in Fort Myers, which got the full brunt of Hurricane Ian. Mm. And we're still waiting to find out what's happened. I know the electricity's out and that, so we don't know what the consequences are. But, I mean, it's a frightening, frightening thing.
It is, and the thing is that when it leaves the land, which it will do, given its current trajectory, it'll go onto the sea again and then gain more strength and then go up the east coast. So you might get quite a bit of rain in the next 3 or 4 days, David. I mean, this is a brutal storm. It's horrible. I've seen the pictures.
And the damage that it does. I mean, it just takes out your house. Mm. Can you imagine the insurance claims after this? So we're yet to find out what the damage was, with the family. And anyway, and trees are uprooted. You want to live in Florida? That's what you get.
Yeah, it's like these people that live in Tornado Alley. And
you get a Republican governor and you get a...
Rasta Santos. Whatever his name is, Rob DeSantis. Anyway, David, thank you very much for your time. Enjoy your walk in the forest. We'll speak next week. That's David Shapiro from Sassman Securities speaking to us from Boston, Massachusetts. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.